If you were reading the St. Louis Post-Dispatch today, this is two times in 2 days. Two times in as many days. Something really worth reading there in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. A commentary by Pam Fichter of Missouri Right to Life. Stem cell research don't pay for progress with compromised morality. Clearing up some of the confusion that we've been hearing so much lately over embryonic stem cell research, adult stem cell research, and human cloning. In just a minute, we'll be talking with Pam Fichter, author of that column in today's St. Louis Post-Dispatch, here on Issues, Etc. To start out, 3 hours of very interesting broadcasting here. I'm Todd Wilkin. When we conclude the conversation with Pam Fichter of Missouri Right to Life, we're going to hear some audio from Senator John Kerry on embryonic stem cell research. He spoke passionately and recently on this subject. I'll have a few thoughts on that. We have open lines that will then hold forth for the next hour of Issues, Etc. I have two questions for you during open lines. The story that came out last week, this appeared everywhere, about the jailhouse conversion and the sympathy that that conversion won for Terry Nichols, one of the conspirators in the Oklahoma City bombing. You remember the bombing. You remember Terry Nichols. During his time in prison, during his time awaiting the various trials he's had to undergo, apparently he had a conversion to Christianity. Some of the jurors are saying that was a factor in their decision not to give him the death penalty, but rather life in prison. My question to you, if you were sitting on the jury, would this win leniency from you, a jailhouse conversion of someone like Terry Nichols? Think about that question. Give us a call during open lines at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And here's a second question, not to be outdone by the first in its audacity. Some of the terrorists who perpetrated the crime of 9/11, before they boarded the planes and killed Americans, were known to have frequented mosques here in America. In fact, I heard that some of them were directed when they arrived in the United States to make contact with certain mosques here in the United States. It raises a question, just raises a very interesting question. Is it time, if these mosques may be places where terrorists, before or after their crimes, receive friendship, welcome, who knows what else, is it time for us to begin monitoring what's being said in these mosques in the United States? What about wiretapping the phones in and out of these mosques, the ones in larger cities, maybe even just the ones where the 9/11 terrorists decided to go and frequented before their crimes were carried out? It's time to find out what's being said there, what's being planned there, what's being discussed. Or is this a violation? Is this a violation of our freedom of religion? Those are two questions. I'd like your answer to both of them during open lines. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. That starts here in about 10 minutes. Then we'll be talking with Peter Jones. He is co-author of the book Cracking Da Vinci's Code. Dan Brown, the author of The Da Vinci Code, says everything in the book except the characters is true. Only the characters are fictional. We'll find out whether that's true with Peter Jones, and we'll round off today's Issues, Etc. Hearing from Ergun Kaner, he's a professor at Liberty University. He also was one of the featured speakers last week when the Southern Baptists met in convention. He had some very interesting things to say. We didn't have a chance when we were covering the convention to play it for you. It's worth listening to. It'll be coming up in the last part of Issues, Etc. today. Now, earlier today, I had the opportunity to speak with Pam Fichter, author of a column in today's St. Louis Post-Dispatch titled Stem Cell Research Don't Pay for Progress with Compromised Morality. She's also president of Missouri Right to Life. I noticed in her column, she wrote, "It is untrue that pro-life people oppose stem cell research." I asked her what she meant by that.
Well, pro-life people support ethical stem cell research, which is adult stem cell research. And that research does not destroy human life. It is also the research that is showing the most promise, the only promise, really. The biotech people would like you to believe that there's only one kind of stem cell research, and it's embryonic stem cells. And it's that misinformation that I think is confusing people. Embryonic stem cell research always destroys a human life, and it has shown zero promise in studies using human using humans, and it's dangerous. And that stem cell research we do not support, but pro-life people enthusiastically support adult stem cell research.
So all of the promises that are being made popularly in the press and elsewhere by the biotech community for embryonic stem cell research, if we could just clone embryos, if we could just use leftover embryos from in vitro fertilization and harvest their stem cells, all those promises for cures of Parkinson's and spinal cord injury and whatever else, all those promises are really being kept by adult stem cells.
Yes, they are. And that's what's so frustrating when you read the discussion of this issue. And of course, this was spurred most recently with the passing of President Reagan, that they're using that as a jumping off point to promote this unethical stem cell research. Embryonic stem cell research destroys a human life, and it is dangerous to use. Adult stem cells are showing remarkable progress in the same uses that they're trying to promote the embryonic stem cells for.
Pam, there is another confusion that you clear up in your column in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch today, and that has to do with the language, the terminology over cloning. First of all, how does cloning play into the issue of stem cell research, and what is the kind of confusion that's been perpetrated on the public with regard to cloning?
Well, what's going on is they've taken a very technical term, somatic cell nuclear transfer, and they are saying that that is not cloning, when in fact that term is merely the technical term for human cloning. And what they're further confusing the issue by making a distinction, a false distinction, between therapeutic cloning and reproductive cloning. The therapeutic cloning, in their words, is where you clone a human being and destroy that embryo in order to do research. They call that therapeutic cloning. I call it clone and kill. And then reproductive cloning is where this new life is implanted and the life is allowed to continue until this new human is born. So they're trying to promote therapeutic cloning, and when really it's the same thing. A cloned human is a cloned human. It doesn't matter what you do with it after it's cloned.
Well, let's go to that issue then. If I have less of a problem with someone cloning a human being, if that human being is then allowed to live, it becomes a serious problem. Cloning is an issue in itself, but it becomes a serious problem if that person is cloned for research purposes, ultimately to be killed.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's a false issue to start with, because all cloning is the same. You know, if you clone a human being, then you have this new life that has begun. And so they're trying to say that if it's not brought to birth, that it's okay. But if they're allowed to destroy it, that, and especially if they're trying to promote it for the better good, so to speak, that they're going to be using that, you know, that embryo that they destroyed to advance medicine, that then that somehow makes it all right to end this new life. And, you know, what we say is it's never okay to end a human life, and it isn't necessary to promote what they, you know, the gains in medicine that they are promoting with this. And there's two other things here that I think that a lot of people don't understand, that in order to advance the embryonic stem cell research, they need cloning, because that's the only way they're going to have enough embryonic stem cells to use. And the other issue that that they need to understand is that with this type of research, with the embryonic stem cells and with cloning, they can then patent those cell lines. And when they can sell them and make money off of it, they cannot patent adult stem cells the same way, because those are products of our own bodies. Adult stem cells are found in body fat. They're found in our teeth. They're available through placentas and cord blood. All of these resources that do not involve the destruction of human life, but those resources cannot be patented because they are available in our own bodies.
So that seems to answer at least in part the question of why the big push for more federal funding for embryonic stem cell research, why the big push for opening up the amount of stem cell lines that are available.
Well, yes, and the other thing, Todd, you know, if embryonic stem cell research was productive, if it was promising, they wouldn't need to have public funding of it because the private money would be supporting it. The private money is all going towards the adult stem cell research because that's where the most promise is being shown through their research. So they're looking for public funding, and they hope to cash in on it somewhere down the line. In the United States government, every year they have, through the appropriations bill, had to try to pass a ban on patenting human beings. And the biotech people, you know, avidly oppose that. And it's an issue that has to come up every year. This year they were able to successfully ban the patenting of human beings, but the biotech people don't have anything to patent yet. So, you know, as soon as they have that they can patent, you can be sure that they're going to pull out all of their forces to stop that ban on human beings, ban on patenting human beings from happening.
Yesterday on the program, Pam, we talked with a representative of Concerned Women for America in Illinois about a clone and kill bill, a bill that would encourage open the way for embryonic stem cell research in the state of Illinois that has been renamed the Ronald Reagan Stem Cell Research Bill, something along those lines, Biomedical Research Bill. What are your thoughts on the use of the Reagan name on this particular issue, stem cell research?
Well, I think it is greatly a great disservice to President Reagan, who was avidly pro-life. I mean, he's the only president that has written as extensively as he has. I mean, he wrote a whole book on the value of human life. So, you know, if you look at what Ronald Reagan said about the sanctity of human life, it's very hard, if not impossible, to believe that he would support the destruction of human life in this manner. You know, the other thing that we see happening, like in New Jersey, in New Jersey law, they now have a law that bans reproductive cloning. It does allow therapeutic cloning, but their law allows this new life to be destroyed right up to the moment of birth. So, you know, that's what the biotech people would like to see in every state. They would like to have free rein to do research on human beings right up to the moment of birth. And I don't think that the majority, if they understood this issue, that they would be supportive of that.
Pam, finally, how important is it that our listeners, the readers of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, who care about the issue of embryonic stem cell research not getting any farther, who want to see adult stem cell research properly portrayed in the press, how important it is for them to contact the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and encourage them when they find a commentary like yours there in the Post?
It's very important. This is a complex issue that can be made understandable if people were honest about the issue and thorough in their reporting of it. And that's where so much of the confusion has come in. And this issue, you know, in my opinion, this is the next Roe v. Wade. When Roe v. Wade was decided in the courts, you know, people all over the country were decried the fact that our states didn't have the opportunity to make the decision on abortion. Well, now our state legislators are going to have the opportunity to make a decision about human life that could be created and destroyed in the laboratories. And it's just very important that we get the information out there, that people get involved in this, that they contact the Post, and that they contact their legislators and let them know that they are opposed to all human cloning.
Pam Fichter is president of Missouri Right to Life and author of this column in today's St. Louis Post-Dispatch titled Stem Cell Research Don't Pay for Progress with Compromised Morality. Pam, thank you for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
Now, folks, that's two times in as many days that we've had someone on who's had something in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch with which we could heartily agree and that we thought was great, marvelous, not just that, but in what was written there, but worthy to bring to you, our listeners. I asked that last question of Pam on the issue of, you know, contacting the Post. When you read things like this, you say, There we go. We're clearing up some miscommunication. We're clearing up some things that are usually very confused in the press. Here's your opportunity to do just that, okay? Two times in 2 days, and this is a regular occurrence here on Issues, Etc. A gentleman named Eric Menk at the editorial department of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, he's in charge of that page. Don't just whine about the liberal news media. When the media brings us something that is truthful, when it brings us something that gets the story right, commend them for it. They're doing their jobs. Isn't this what we want? Sure it is. To be able to open the pages of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and read the truth. So give Eric Menk on the editorial department of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch a call. I'll even give you his number, 314-340-8391. Don't just whine. When they do a good job, tell them they've done a good job. 314-340-8391. It's Eric Menk, or his email is emink, that's E-M-I-N-K, at post-dispatch.com. Thank them for the two commentaries and more that you have read there and heard about here on Issues, Etc. The first one yesterday was Sherry Tyree's Tips for Pro-Choice Advocates. And the second one there by Pam Fichter, the guest we just heard, called Stem Cell Research Don't Pay for Progress with Compromised Morality. Here's Eric Mink's number again. Area code 314-340-8391, or his email address, emink, that's E-M-I-N-K, at post-dispatch.com. Now, just days before America's Roman Catholic bishops declared that Catholic politicians have an obligation to support church teachings, especially with regard to life, Senator John Kerry has declared his support for research that destroys human embryos. We just heard about it from Pam Fichter. Embryonic stem cell research. Senator Kerry told supporters in Denver yesterday that Nancy Reagan, former First Lady, her support for using embryonic stem cell research for cures, that he supports her ideas on this. He supports her support of embryonic stem cell research for cures of diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's.
Her pleas for stem cell research join the pleas of millions across this country and reinforces in all of us the need to tear down every wall today that keeps us from finding the cures of tomorrow.
Sounding a little Reagan-esque there with tear down every wall. He is calling for, along with Nancy Reagan and many other senators, that letter that went to President Bush a couple weeks ago had John Kerry's signature, among others, on it, calling for him to widen the number of embryo stem cell lines that could be available under federal funding for biomedical research. Senator Kerry also says if he is elected president, he's going to make science policy in a very different way than President Bush.
I'm not going to let ideology and fear stand in the way. When America sees a problem or a possibility of greatness, it is in our collective character to set our sights on that horizon and not stop working until we get there.
It sounds good. You know, don't let ideology or fear stand in the way of progress and of America being great and solving these problems like these diseases. Is it ideology and fear that's standing in the way? Or is it morality that's standing in the way? Is it the embryos that are standing in the way? And those who want to protect human embryos from being destroyed for research purposes? Now, I want you to listen very carefully to the next two cuts. Listen very carefully to both of these. Senator Kerry says that he is confident that embryonic stem cell research can be done in a proper and moral way.
I have full faith that our scientists will go forward with a moral compass, with humane values and sound ethics guiding the way.
All right. He has no problem with trusting the scientists to be both humane and ethical when they do this research. This is what the big question mark is. Now, lay aside for a moment that it is, at least in my way of thinking, impossible to destroy human embryos in a humane or ethical way, because that's what embryonic stem cell research requires. But he has confidence that the scientists and the scientific community can conduct their research into cures for Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and other diseases with regard to stem cells in a moral and ethical way. He has confidence in those scientists. Now listen carefully to what Senator Kerry has to say next.
We must push the boundaries of medical exploration so that researchers can find treatments that are there, if only they're allowed to look. And we should do this while providing strict ethical oversight.
Now, is it just me, or does that sound like something of a contradiction? He trusts the scientists and the scientific and the research communities to carry out this embryonic stem cell research in a humane and ethical way. And yet when he says that all we want to do is just let the scientists look for the cures that are there, he wants strict ethical guidelines. So which is it, Senator Kerry? Do you trust the scientists to be ethical, or do you want them to act under ethical guidelines? If you trust them, why do you need ethical guidelines for the research and for the scientists who want to do embryonic stem cell research? Why would you need them at all if, number one, the research is morally neutral? Why do you need any ethical guidelines? If destroying a human embryo for research purposes or to harvest its stem cells is not wrong, what do you need guidelines for? It's like saying, I want to ride my bike, but I'll only do it under strict ethical guidelines. What does that mean? Go ride your bike. There's nothing wrong with riding your bike. You only need ethical guidelines when there's an ethical problem somewhere near, when there's an ethical minefield you're trying to navigate. Now, according to John Kerry, this is not an ethical minefield. There's no problem with doing embryonic stem cell research. The only thing holding us back is ideology and fear, not morality. Not questions of right and wrong. So how can you trust the scientists to do this thing that's morally neutral and still call for ethical guidelines? I just don't understand. It's open lines for the next hour of Issues, etc. If you'd like to react to that, or one of the two questions I have to lay before you here during open lines, feel free to give us a call at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Feel free to respond to that question. Terry Nichols, one of the conspirators in the Oklahoma City bombing, has undergone a series of trials in the last several years. He will not be getting the death penalty. He's going to get life in prison. Now, the death penalty would be warranted here under the state law, under every law we possibly know of, because we've got over 150 people dead, the deaths of which Terry Nichols had a hand in, a direct hand in. However, according to a story that came out a couple weeks ago, actually last week, Terry Nichols, one of the Oklahoma City bombing conspirators, may have been spared the death penalty for a second time because a jailhouse conversion to Christianity gained him sympathy with the jury. When we come back, I'd like your answer to the question, if you were on that jury, would that have gained him sympathy with you? We'll be right back.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Which of the laws of the Old Testament apply to Christians today, and which do not? More importantly, why don't they? How does a scriptural understanding of Jesus Christ as the fulfiller of the whole law answer these questions? In our Issues, Etc. book of the month for June, you'll find answers to these questions, and you'll discover how Christ speaks in the Old Testament. You can order our Issues, Etc. book of the month for June, the Concordia Commentary on the Book of Leviticus, by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Or visit our website, issuesetc.org, and under the What's New section, you'll find information on the Concordia Commentary on the Book of Leviticus. When you call or write, mention Issues, etc. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
Burning money has a spiritual purpose for the Chinese. This global minute highlights people called the Dong so you can pray for them. Families who belong to the Dong ethnic group pray at local temples and burn spirit money so their relatives can have something to spend during their next life. They also leave food like eggs and rice at the grave sites. Chinese families of all ethnicities believe that they must do the right thing for their ancestors so they themselves will have good things happen to them. About 1 million Dong live in northern Guizhou province, and while they're active making money and learning the latest technologies, they cling tightly to ancient religious beliefs. The Global Prayer Digest magazine estimates that only several hundred of the 1 million Dong have a relationship with Jesus Christ. Pray for gospel breakthroughs among them. Learn the beliefs of people in different religions by visiting the website missionvisionnetwork.org. That's missionvisionnetwork.org.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Back in grade school, my teachers took care to instruct us on the proper way to open a new textbook. Today is the official release of President Clinton's book, My Life. Will you buy it? And if you do, what will be your way of opening and reading My Life? For that matter, how do you approach any book? Francis Bacon wrote, "Crafty men despise studies, simple men admire them, and wise men use them. Read not to contradict and confute, nor to believe and take for granted, nor to find talk and discourse, but to weigh and consider. Some books are to be tasted, others to be swallowed, and some few to be chewed and digested." Without books, theological understanding is impossible. St. Paul wrote to Timothy, "When you come, bring my scrolls, especially the parchments." Even theological reading requires discernment. Ecclesiastes 12 says, "Of making many books there is no end, and much study wearies the body." Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. That said, maybe I'm still missing the more fundamental question, do you read books?
Hey. You've heard the saying, it's a jungle out there. That's true. But if you're like most of today's families, it's a jungle right here, right now. Find direction with Dr. James Dobson and focus on the family. Straight answers and solid advice for dealing with life in the jungle.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
An hour from now, this is an interesting picture. I got a board op sitting across from me with a boiled egg sticking out of his mouth. An hour from now on Issues Etc., and he had to put the thing in his mouth so he could press the buttons. We're going to be talking with Peter Jones of Westminster Seminary about the Da Vinci Code. He has co-authored a book. It's here someplace. Ah, there it is. It's called Cracking the Da Vinci Code. Very interesting. And it's got something unique in it that I have not found in any of the other critiques of the Da Vinci Code. We'll get to that right up front when we start our conversation with Peter Jones of Westminster Seminary on the Da Vinci Code. That's from 4:30 to 5:30 here on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're taking your phone calls for the next hour. Anything you want to talk about, reaction to John Kerry's recent Denver statements about embryonic stem cell research, where he says, look, he trusts the scientists to go ahead and do this the right way. And then in the next breath, he wants to put them under strict moral guidelines when they do their research. And it seems a bit of a contradiction. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, I laid the first question for you on the table before the break. Terry Nichols, according to the press, may have been spared the death penalty and given life in prison by the jury recently because of his conversion to Christianity in the midst of the trial and his incarceration. One of those connected with the trial said that he believes Nichols was spared because of sympathy issues among some jurors, including his religious conversion, one that prosecutors said conveniently began, his conversion that is, about the time state murder charges were filed against him. Wallace, that is the defense attorney for Nichols, said that Nichols' religious conversion was genuine and that the jurors might have also believed that Nichols was used by McVeigh, who was executed on federal murder charges June 11th, 2001. Now, McVeigh got the death penalty. Remember? Lethal injection for Timothy McVeigh. His conspirator, Terry Nichols, gets life in prison on state charges. And some from within the trial say, even some former jurors say, yes, his religious conversion was a factor. If you were sitting on that jury for Terry Nichols, one of the conspirators in the Oklahoma City bombing, would a religious conversion to Christianity on the part of the accused won any sympathy with you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, I'm not asking this question to lure anyone into my spider's web. I am asking this question. I want your thoughts on this. This is his conspirator got the death penalty. He gets to go off with, not go off, but he gets spared the death penalty and gets life in prison. And one of the factors in the minds of the jury was his religious conversion to Christianity. If you were sitting on that jury, would you do the same? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Another question, and think about it this way, tying into the last one. If we would have known in advance that Terry Nichols and Timothy McVeigh and whoever else may have been involved were planning the bombing in Oklahoma City, the first thing that the Federal Bureau of Investigation would have done would probably begin to surveil those men and also monitor their communications, wiretap their homes, their places of business, trying to find out both what they were planning and how they were planning it so that they could stop the bombing in Oklahoma City. It would have been the best thing to do, right? In fact, if we would have known that the FBI had such information beforehand and failed to wiretap them and monitor their communications, we would be faulting the FBI for not having prevented the bombing in Oklahoma City. Here comes the question. The 9/11 terrorists, some of them, when they arrived in the United States, began to frequent mosques here in the United States, Muslim houses of worship. Some of them were even told where to go, which mosques to attend in the United States. Now, it might have been a good idea to monitor the communications in and out of those mosques before 9/11, if we had known that something was being planned, right? I mean, we didn't, but if we had known. Is it time to start doing that now? We don't know if another 9/11 is on the way. Those who were in the know say, yes, there will be another terrorist attack on American soil. Is it time to start wiretapping mosques in the United States? Or at least in the major cities of the United States? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Or would that be a violation of our freedom of religion, to wiretap mosques in the United States? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now again, I'm not asking this question to lure you in. I'm asking this question because God's word says nothing about it. It's not wrong to wiretap. I mean, it's prudential to wiretap when you think it can prevent something tragic. These questions are neither here nor there when it comes to God's word. There is no thus saith the Lord on this. I just want your opinions. Should we be wiretapping mosques in the United States, given the fact that 9/11 terrorists frequented mosques before their crimes? A few of them. But who knows? Even if Joe Blow, the terrorist, was frequenting the mosque, he might be the terrorist lucky enough to actually carry out the crime that's been planned. It's open lines for your questions and your comments. Also, your answers to these two questions. Terry Nichols got off because of a religious conversion to Christianity. He doesn't get the death penalty, but life in prison if you were sitting on the jury. Would his conversion to Christianity want any leniency with you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Anything else you want to talk about during this hour of open lines up until 4:30? And also, would it be wise now for us to begin to wiretap mosques in the United States? We don't know who's going in and who's going out. We don't know what kind of communications we might run across in order to perhaps prevent another 9/11. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We are coming to you live. It's Tuesday, June the 22nd. Why does that Why does that stick in my mind for some reason? I don't know. I have no idea. And Peter Jones is coming up in about 50 minutes. We're going to be talking about the Da Vinci Code with him. He's written a book on the Da Vinci Code. And then we'll hear a little bit in the last few minutes of Issues, Etc. from Ergun Kaner of Liberty University, who spoke at the Southern Baptist Convention's gathering, their annual gathering. He had some very interesting things to say on two subjects that I just thought, my goodness, where else are you going to hear something like this? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Tim is up first. He's calling from his car. Tim, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you. I was calling about the Terry Nichols issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of my favorite characters in all of Scripture is the thief on the cross. I mean, you know, the easy part about his death is that he did go on to paradise. I guess what I'm saying is I wouldn't necessarily, I don't know if sympathy is the right word. I think I would still convict him of his crime, but I would almost feel better knowing that he's a believer and going on to paradise in a repentant form rather than someone who you might be sending to hell.
Well, okay.
I don't know if that makes sense or not, but
no, it makes sense. It makes perfect sense because, of course, we are delighted that Terry Nichols is a Christian. We're delighted about that. But I guess the question for you is, laying aside the issue of sympathy, would you give him the lighter sentence of life in prison as opposed to death if you were on the jury because of his conversion to Christianity?
No.
Wouldn't make any difference to you. Not in the sense of what kind of sentence you would hand down.
No, I don't. No, I think the sentence would be merit based, unlike salvation.
Yeah. Well, good point. And now, before I let you go, another question here, and I know you called in about Terry Nichols, but what do you think about wiretapping mosques in the United States?
I'm not sure. I was thinking about that one before I called, and that's a toughie because of the issue at hand, that is, you know, religious freedom. I don't know if there was information before the last attack that could have been gleaned from such a process that would have stopped anything.
Right. The only way to know if there was information was to have had a wiretapper monitoring the communications
right
beforehand. And that's kind of my question. Since the only way to know if the information is there is to actually listen in, do you think it's prudential to listen in now to what's coming in and out of mosques in the United States?
You know, Schaefer said, you know, I reserve the right to disagree with you, but I'd die for the right for your right to disagree with me. I just, you know, as soon as you say, yeah, we should tap their phones, then somebody's going to say, well, to make sure we don't have another crusade, we need to start tapping the phones of, you know, the Presbyterians or whatever.
Well, you know, I understand exactly what you're saying, Tim. And to tell you the truth, I don't have a problem with that. Thank you very much for your call. I mean, I don't know what my pastor's doing on the phone, but I'm pretty sure he's not planning a terrorist plot or a crusade. So if we are monitoring the telephone lines of houses of worship, okay, to put it, let's say for the sake of argument that Terry Nichols and Timothy McVeigh just loved to go to church on Sunday. And they were members of some sort of a church where, you know, the viewpoints they held about the U.S. government were being reinforced by the preacher there. You can find these kind of Christian churches throughout the Bible Belt. People who don't completely agree with Terry Nichols or his means, but they do agree with his view of the U.S. government. All right? Might have been smart to listen to what was coming in and going out by way of communication of those churches. Might have found something out. Saved some lives. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I mean, you think about it this way. If the Muslim mosque has nothing to hide in by way of its communication, what's being said there, they really shouldn't mind. Is it a violation of religious freedom if we were to wiretap mosques here in the United States? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Would you have a problem if your church, was being wiretapped? Let's say it was the case of some sort of pro-life advocate gone awry and he completely destroys, he bombs a clinic. He's a member of your church. The FBI says, look, we got to find out what was going on. Did you have a problem with it? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Up next, Cindy is on the line. She's calling from South County.
Hi.
Hi, Cindy.
The government really didn't have a hard time going into Waco and leveling that compound. So I would be far, whether it be a church or a mosque or whatever it is, to push the Constitution as far as it will go in order to stop any kind of subversive activity.
So you wouldn't have a problem?
I would not.
You would not have a problem?
Mm-mm. No, because the law has to rule. In the kingdom and the left, the law has got to rule, because otherwise you go into chaos.
A question for you there, and this occurs, you know, just several hundred miles to the north of us in the nation of Canada, there has been legislation passed declaring it a hate crime to express the opinion that homosexuality is wrong, deviant, an abomination, whatever terms you want to use, whatever terms God's Word uses on this. So speaking out against homosexuality can be considered a hate crime in Canada. If that were the case in the United States, well, it may be sometime in the future, would you have a problem with the government saying, look, we just want to make sure you're not committing any hate crimes. We want to wiretap what your pastor's saying in and out of his office on his telephone or his email or something along those lines. We want to be able to have someone monitor what he's preaching on Sunday.
My pastor better stick to the Word of God and say that homosexuality is wrong, whether he has to be imprisoned for it or not.
Thank you very much, Cindy.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I like the way she's thinking. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Is it a question of religious freedom? Now, I know what would happen in practical terms if anyone were to suggest that, anyone in government were to suggest, let's wiretap mosques. The roof would come crashing down. The walls would come crashing down from every direction. But that's why I'm asking you to kind of think about this in the clear light of day. No one suggested it. But think about this in the clear light of day. A few of the 9/11 terrorists were in mosques on a regular basis. Now, there were all sorts of other places, too. They were in strip clubs. They were in hotels. They were all over the place. You can monitor the flight school where they went to learn how to fly planes. Monitor their communications. It would be smart, right? You would monitor and track down their bills and what they did every moment of the day when they were staying in a hotel someplace in mid-America. Get their credit card receipts from the strip clubs they went to. What movies they rented. We know everything about what they were doing. Now, on Friday, they were in the mosque. Shouldn't we know what was being said and done there? What kind of communications they had there, too? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And since the imams and the clergy of Muslims have been proven here to be, in Muslim nations, so very instrumental in forming the mindset of terrorists, sometimes even issuing fatwas that, well, at least in a religious terms, give terrorists their permission, their authority to do what they do. Do we need to start monitoring conversations of imams in the United States? Give me a call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Car phone callers, first-time callers, internet callers will receive top priority as usual, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. About 30 minutes of open lines remains. Give us a call. Paul is up next. He's calling from his car. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Todd.
Hi, Paul.
Wanted to talk about the Terry Nichols case.
Sure.
I was curious on the real motivation behind that decision as far as to relieve him of the justice of the capital punishment in that case. One thing that was said about McVeigh prior to his sentencing was if he does not receive the death penalty, then on what basis would you hand that down to any person, given, the sheer number of deaths involved?
And, right, right.
One has to wonder about the motivation of some of the jurors, too, who perhaps from their own would claim to be a Christian, and would ask what their biblical justification would be for such a thing. There certainly is a controversy on that topic, even within the church, but I think that the scriptures are plain enough.
Would it make any difference to you then, if you were sitting on the jury, whether or not Terry Nichols was a Christian, had converted to Christianity, when it came to what sentence you handed down for his conspiracy in the death of 69 people?
Well, I don't see how his behavior post the crime would have any bearing on the merits of the case. I mean, either this is objectively heinous and immoral and deserves justice, or it doesn't. I mean, there's still, you know, if in fact he's a believer genuinely, and, you know, he's received Christ and the merits of Christ have been imputed to him, then he's saved from the eternal judgment of God, but that doesn't absolve him from receiving the penalty that's due to him temporally.
Paul, thank you very much. We have the smartest listeners on Christian radio, don't you think? How does his behavior after the crime in any way mitigate the judgment about the crime and the punishment handed down for the crime? Do you remember this lady in Texas who had received the death penalty and then she had converted to Christianity and she went ahead and had the death penalty? She did not want to appeal the death penalty. She understood, as a Christian, this is what I deserve. I deserve capital punishment. There were people who wanted her to have life in prison. You know, Terry, Paul's right. The case was, do you remember this conversation taking place when Timothy McVeigh received the death penalty, and there were people saying, well, the death penalty is just a bad idea, and the argument was made to counter that. Look, if what he did does not merit the death penalty, what in the world would? I mean, how many people do you have to kill in one fell swoop in order for the death penalty to be called for? And that's kind of the argument of, look, there just comes a point where the only fit punishment for crimes like this, these monstrous crimes that have scope so far beyond our imagination, the only fit penalty for these is death. So it wouldn't make any difference to Paul. He'd still get the death penalty. Another caller says the same thing. Wouldn't make any difference. Does anyone out there disagree? Who, if they were sitting on the jury, a conversion to Christianity by Terry Nichols would be a mitigating factor. Yeah, he did conspire to kill these people, and he had a hand in their deaths, but now he's a Christian. And like the jury who decided to do this very thing, you'd say, you know what? No death penalty, life in prison. After all, he's converted to Christianity, he's seen the error of his ways. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. So far, no one directly calling on this mosque issue. I mean, we've several callers here about the Terry Nichols issue. And I'll admit, folks, that's the easier one. The harder question is, should we be wiretapping mosques today to prevent a terrorist act tomorrow? We're told repeatedly by people who do know, who do have access to the kind of intelligence that none of us have access to as the public, they're here. There are cells operating here. Okay, not every terrorist is an Arab. Not every terrorist is a Muslim. Terry Nichols, Timothy McVeigh, good examples of terrorists who are neither. But if there are cells operating in the United States, and if on a Friday night one or more of the members of these cells can be found in a mosque as a Muslim, on Monday morning they're at work. If we knew that they were operating at work, you know, say they work, for the sake of argument, it's a computer programmer someplace. Monday morning they're at work. If we knew that one of the members of these terrorist cells in the United States worked a certain place, you'd say, wiretap the dang office. Come on, if we knew it. They, on Wednesday nights, perhaps go to, they frequent a restaurant and meet with some of their friends, some of whom may also be parts of these cells. And we knew that this is where they go on Wednesday nights. They go to Sizzler on Wednesday night. I don't know where they want to go. If we knew, we'd say, We want to know what they're talking about there at the table at Sizzler. We want to know what they're discussing. We want to know who shows up, who leaves, who they are, who they're talking to. If we knew where one of the members of these cells lived, he lives in an apartment complex in Los Angeles. You'd say, wiretap the apartment. Is the mosque any different? The mosque they go to there in Los Angeles, any different? Is Friday mosque's attendance, is that something we can't touch? We can't wiretap the mosque. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What do you think about this? I mean, Scripture has nothing to say about this one way or the other. It's neither right nor wrong to wiretap. I mean, it can be wrong, but it's not necessarily wrong to do this. Is it an infringement of religious freedom? I'm very anxious to hear your opinion on this. I have yet to make up my mind, to be quite honest with you. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. When we come back, 25 minutes of open lines for your questions and your comments. We'll be talking with Peter Jones about the Da Vinci Code. We'll also hear later in the program from Ergun Kaner some comments he made. Ergun Kaner, I think, is a rising star. We ought to be listening for him. He is going to answer the question of whether or not Muslims and Christians worship the same God. Of course, Ergun Kaner, if you're familiar with him at all, is not only a professor at Liberty University, but also, along with his brother, author of many books on these kind of subjects. The latest one's called Christian Jihad, great book, and they are both former Muslims. He's also going to answer, at least opine, about the kind of representation that Christians get in the popular media, on cable television programs. He gets a little worked up. I'm sure you're anxious to hear it. That's coming up later on Issues, Etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Tomorrow on the program, there's a Time Magazine story on female pastors. We're going to be talking with David Van Bima of Time Magazine about that very thing, and Dr. Martin Nolan of the Concordia Historical Institute. Tomorrow on Issues, Etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. This break is a great time to call on both of those questions. Terry Nichols seems to have gotten some leniency in his sentence, a life sentence rather than the death sentence, because of a conversion to Christianity. He had a hand in the death of almost 170 people in the Oklahoma City bombing. Would it have made a difference to you that he converted to Christianity if you were on the jury? And should we begin to wiretap mosques in America in order to help prevent another 9/11? We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.